Hello and welcome. This is Home Life for Extraordinary Impact. My name is Matt Barrios. I'm a husband, dad, researcher, writer, and coach. And I am exploring the topic of home life from global perspectives with experts and everyday folks all around the world. And I am really, really committed to one big research question, which is how do people set up their homes in order for those to be places of consistent growth, meaningful connection, and setting them up to make their greatest impact in the world. It's a big topic with, I think, multifaceted ways to explore home. And I'm so excited to do that with so many people that I've interviewed from all around the world. And today I get to have a really special interview with Casey. And Casey is currently calling from Portland, Oregon. And I'm just so thankful that she took the time out of her busy schedule to come be a part of this project. Casey is an expert in things like authentic personal branding. She takes a powerful stand for mental health and personal growth in how she creates content on the internet and so many things, how she interacts with people. And I've got to be a direct beneficiary of some of the work that she has done. So thank you so much, Casey, for being a part of this project. Again, just thank you for taking the time.
Matt, thanks for asking me. I'm so excited to be here. You have always struck me as one of the most like authentic and just real humans in the world. And so I'm excited to have this conversation. I think the work you're doing is really important. If there's anything we've all learned in the last few years, it's that home life really, really matters. And I think a lot of us have been on this journey of trying to figure out what that means for us. And so I think it's a really beautiful kind of conversation that you're facilitating through this podcast. So I'm excited to be a part of it.
Well, thank you so much. I wasn't fishing for compliments, but I will take all of them. Thank you very much. I'm excited that, for the duration of this podcast interview, like we'll get to stand for that together and exploring yes. home life and what that can look like for people and really help people with that. So it was a way to get into that and for people to get to know you as well. What are the things that you like to do at home that help you set up for things like being a growing person and being authentic and so on?
You know, it's so interesting. I think even just while kind of preparing to have this conversation with you, I've been thinking more about this. And it's interesting because I personally think I've been on a real journey of sort of figuring that out for myself and my partner and I together. Both of us are natural like workaholics. And so for a long time, our house was kind of like, it was like where we slept and where we sort of shut our brain off at the end of really busy days. But I don't know that it was really, I don't think we put a ton of intention into making it feel like a solace, a sanctuary. And I think we still have a long way to go in that. But it's really, I would say in the last probably 2 years that we've really started to remake our home so that it is more, I don't know, like a big warm hug. And I'll also say we've like our poor little house has been going through the ringer. No joke. We just finished, we had a leak in our, essentially in the ceiling in our upstairs. Someone installed a fan in the bathroom incorrectly. Tons of water damage. We fixed everything, completely redid the bathroom. This is like 5 years ago. And then it was in COVID, we realized, nope, they had not fixed that at all. And I'm not exaggerating. They came and demoed a solid like 70% of the ceiling in our upstairs. So our bedroom, they demoed all of the bathroom and then a bunch of the ceiling and the little sitting area that we have outside of the bedroom. So we literally were sleeping without a ceiling for all winter. So roof, no insulation, no nothing. It would be, I'm not exaggerating, like 55 degrees in our bedroom. And then when they actually came to do the work, it took 2 months and then we had to like move downstairs. And I was talking to my mother and she's like, oh my God, like, it's always something. It's so terrible. And I was like, honestly, now we're just like so chill and we're so just like grateful to have like our bedroom back. And so now we're sort of like re-putting everything together. And we're like so grateful for the tiniest little things. And so there's something kind of amazing about when, I don't know, we all know we appreciate things more after they get yanked away from us. And so now we're in that mode of, we're like, you know, redecorating the upstairs and making it feel homier and adding more plants and, you know, embracing the fact that we finally don't have a leak in the ceiling and like all these things. And so I think for us right now, it's, we're on this journey basically of making home life feel as comfortable and as relaxing as possible. And so this last year has also been, my partner has a real green thumb and he's completely transformed both the front and the back yards, like growing what he refers to as our food forest. And, and so for us, it's not about being fancy. It's not about, impressing people. It's about, does it feel comfortable? Do we enjoy being present and being with each other and appreciating the little things in life?
That is so good.
Yeah.
And I just, like, first of all, I can't imagine having to live without a freaking roof through winter. That's insane. Like, how in the world was that possible? Well, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
And also, like, man, it says a lot to your, and in some ways it's not surprising to hear you say this, but like your capacity to mindset shift through that, through something like that, in order to find, actually, and it just has made us more grateful for what we have and the small things and all of that versus, like, I don't know, the endless grief.
Whoa.
Like
Well, and I think the other thing that we've really embraced is it's given us a chance to almost hit the reset button on how our house is all set up. And so it's really interesting. I won't bore you with the details, but like the way that our bedroom is just constructed, it's a little bit of a weird space because it's essentially, you know, it was originally just an attic and then they redid the attic. And so it's a little odd. And before all of this happened, we had our bed in this one space. And I was convinced that that's the only place where we could have the bed.
Yeah.
And when we had to move out and everything, and then we were putting things back, and my partner Andy was like, well, what if we didn't put the bed there? And it was like, what are you talking about? And like, and I just like, I genuinely was like, that's not possible. And
that's,
he was like,
I think,
yeah, that's the bed spot. And guess what, you know, the bed doesn't have to go there. And so we changed that, and it genuinely made it feel like everything could be different. And so how we're setting up everything in the house is substantially different, and it feels like, I don't know, it's this good metaphor for the fact that we can totally reinvent ourselves and our lives and the way things work. And sometimes it takes a sort of dramatic circumstance for us to realize that that's possible, but it is possible. And it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of amazing.
Seriously, it reminds me a lot of like when people go get a haircut and they feel like a new person, right? Like, or when, I don't know, like whatever, all these kinds of things. Like, and I think it's very true of our environments that we live in, where the average person spending 2/3 of their life at home, right? Like, so if we're there and those places kind of set a vibe, set a tone for what we want to be like, right? Yeah. That's helpful. And even just to know that it can be changed. And in that way, it can also lead a change that I might want to see in myself.
And often we think that the way to change it, you know, we watch all of these, you know, makeover shows, you know, and like, obviously I'm a fan of Queer Eye, and like, that's a more positive one than a lot of the others, but it's always like, oh, the way you reinvent your home is by buying a ton of stuff. And it's like, no, like, genuinely, we didn't buy anything. We just moved where the bed was. And it seriously, it looks like a completely different space. It feels different. It just, it's incredible how small adjustments can make things feel incredibly different. And it's oddly empowering.
Yeah, I love that idea of empowering. And I know that part of what you are standing for in the world really is like empowerment and mental health and kind of like people being growing, transforming people. How does your home, your life at home help, you know, help you take that stand?
I think that's another thing that I'm still figuring out. So it's one of the things that I think I've kind of been realizing and sort of peeling back the layers of in the last couple of years is like how I was raised and what aspects of that are helpful and healthy and what aspects are not. Sure. And I was raised, my mother is a decorator. My parents were, especially growing up, a little bit like image obsessed. I mean, my parents live in like beautiful, pristine, perfect houses where like there is literally nothing ever out of place. My mother, I'm not exaggerating, there was little that made her more upset when like my brother and I were like in our teenage or early 20s years than we'd be home on vacation, home from college or something to visit them, and we'd stay up late, like just talking, hanging out, watching TV. And if we went to bed without poofing the cushions on the like chair and couch that we sat in, my mother would like, it was like a meltdown city. It was you don't love us. It was like so intense. Oh yeah. My parents are like really, we've worn them down. They have chilled out as they've gotten older, thank God. But genuinely, like our like home was beautiful, but felt not very homey.
Right. The idea of like being comfortable and relaxed and something like that in home. It sounds like it would be few and far between the opportunities to do something like that. Yeah.
And so I think that I think for a long time I kind of grappled with the fact that I couldn't afford to have a home that looked the way I was raised. And so I felt, an unworthiness in that way. And so I think I went through years where I just like didn't take a lot of like care in my home as a result. Or I've had this like sort of, I don't know, this push and pull with that. And so I think the last few years especially have been this sort of reinvention of like, okay, what does home mean for me?
Yeah.
What do I care about? And we've started to realize like, you know what, our biggest goals are being able to kind of be outdoors and watching our dogs run around like the crazy animals that they are and eating really good food.
Yeah. Yeah. I think those are superb goals for life at home. Like let's enjoy our pets and let's savor our great meals.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. How did you like arrive at those values? Like, I mean, is it just kind of trial and error? You just kind of notice or like what was that process like?
I think it's been an ongoing process. But I think so, you know, like I mentioned, my partner, we're both workaholics, but I think in the last couple of years, he's realized his work doesn't make him as happy. He's in the weed business. He grows marijuana. Yeah. And it's like, it's a weird industry. And, you know, it's kind of frustrating. And so I think he was like, you know what, I'd rather work a little less hard, make a little less money, and like have a nicer home and like make incredible food at home. Mm-hmm. And I think I've also been on that journey of like, I don't know, I've always been like, had a lot of drive. And I think in the last year I've been like, I want to do stuff, but I don't really care that much any, like I don't feel this like deep need to prove myself. So now it's like, what brings me joy?
Mm.
And so we try to kind of create an environment where we can just experience life. And I think that one of the things I truly love about my partner is he, every meal with him is like a true experience. Like,
in what way? I need to know. Like, what makes it a true experience?
So I hate the term foodie. I think it's so pretentious and lame, but like we both are really, really into food and really into good food. And he'll be one of those people where he'll be like, you know, he'll point out subtle little things about whatever it is we're eating or how he made it or how or where it is. So there's just, he and I will never be like out at a restaurant sitting on our phones. Like that just doesn't happen. It's like, and what winds up happening, you know, we're the people that like, when we go to a great restaurant, we're sitting at the chef's counter and we're like watching them make it and we're asking them questions and we're like, you know, and it is genuinely about like the entire experience and like noticing things and appreciating it and just having fun with it. And we were always good about doing that when we were out, but not as good doing it at home. Mm-hmm. And we started to be like, okay, what could we do to change how we cook and eat at home so that it feels more like we are out at some fabulous restaurant spoiling ourselves and like experiencing everything. And it's,
I think that's such a compelling idea to think about, like, because I think it, I've heard it said, you know, for people who really, really love food and like love to savor great meals, they don't need dinner and a show for a date night. They need, like, dinner is the show.
Dinner is the show.
And you said that you have been able to bring that sort of mindset to home. You know, like, what is that? How does that play out practically to make dinner the show at home?
So we cook together. Andy is really like, he's the chef. I'm the really crappy sous chef with terrible skills. But so that means, you know, and it, our kitchen isn't ideally set up for this, but like, that's okay. We do it anyway. So we're in there together and we're talking and sometimes we'll be playing music. I think the other thing, I know that people are very opinionated about this. We don't, it, and when we go out or, and definitely when we're home, we share everything. There's no like, he has a plate and I have a plate. Mm-hmm. When we eat, we put everything on a big wooden cutting board. And so it'll be like steak in the middle, you know, veg on one side, maybe some potatoes in a bowl or something. And then we're just eating together. And so it's so this, good. It's this like big shared experience. We also, Andy has gotten really into wine now. And so he'll also be like, try to pick the perfect wine. And he'll, or some, every now and then he'll be like, there'll be two. And he'll like, make me do a blind taste test. And like, and it's just, it's more about like, can you find, I don't know, these like little moments of like shared joy and playfulness.
Yes.
In
yes.
that whole experience.
And so much focus on having a true shared experience. Even down to eating from the same plate and playing games with like the flavors of wines. Like, I love that because
it's fun.
It is so easy to treat eating as like, just got to get my nutrients in and that's that, right? But this is a whole different way of going about food at home.
When I'm eating like lunch by myself, it's like I'm sitting at my computer and I like scarf it down in 3 minutes. I mean, it's just, there's no, I'm not even breathing. It's just gone, you know? And so it's, and I think a lot of us are that way. Mm-hmm. And so there's something kind of amazing about, and I think this is true of everything like mental health, personal growth, like all the rest, particularly in the world that we live in. Everything is rushed. Mm-hmm. Everything is rushed. And like, for what? Like, what are we rushing to? I mean, it would be one thing if it's like, oh no, I'm trying to squeeze every ounce of meaning out of every moment, but that's not it. It's like, I read this book, a few months ago that I'm kind of obsessed with called 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals. Highly, highly recommended. It's like the most philosophical book about time management, because it's not really about time management. His whole thesis basically is like, the whole concept of productivity, even the idea that like time is a controllable asset, was literally it's like a capitalist invention that didn't exist until we started having factories. And like, it's, you know, it's a creation of the man. But like, he genuinely is like, look, the whole concept of productivity, all we're doing is trying to get more tiny tasks done so that we can just get more stuff done. There's no moment where you're like, oh, I've done enough, I can slow down. Like,
yeah.
And we're all rushing through life, and we're missing the stuff that really matters. The moments with our family, the moments with the people that we love, like just experiencing new things. And so I think the concept I've been kind of obsessed with over the last couple of years is doing everything I can to slow the F down. And eating is probably one of the most enjoyable and maybe easiest ways for me to do that, because I'm not very good at doing it in like literally anything else.
I think there's optimization culture that is brought to us by, and you know, the engineering mindset, and you know, pack it all in and all of that, a factory mindset. I think it totally hits a barrier when it comes to quality of life at home. Actually, like, you can't optimize home. Like, as much as I think like there is like something to say about being intentional about it, I think optimization or something like that, it doesn't fit when we're thinking about how do I like slow down, treasure relationships, savor meals, get good rest, have fun with my hobbies, you know, get some inspiration, you know, like all of these things. The idea of bringing productivity optimization to it just doesn't fit, right? It's like different categories.
Well, I think what's interesting is like, I think there are ways that we can optimize like how our home is set up so that we spend less time cleaning, or we spend like, there's ways to optimize so that it's easier to spend more time on the things that matter. But I think we get into this habit, and I know I'm so guilty of this, of optimizing for optimization's sake and like kind of missing the point. And you know, something my therapist brought up with me a while ago, where I was like, I don't know, I was like talking about my meditation practice, and he was like, I don't know, the way you talk about this, it just sounds like another box that you're checking off. Like, it feels like it's kind of missing the point.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh. Like, and he was 100% right. And he also makes jokes that my default setting is more of a human doing than a human being.
Sure.
And truly, like, I think what I am on this journey sort of grappling with is like, okay, when I'm not actively doing stuff, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what am, like, you know, I've sort of trained myself to be like, oh, find problems and fix them, make things better. But that means that over time, I have a tendency to look for problems that aren't really a problem.
Invent a problem so that you can fix it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we do that. I think in this push to optimize everything, like, optimization is good as long as it's supporting something real. And I think we have a tendency to get away from that.
I'm reminded of the fact that you have such a deep background, and you would even say like, you tend towards workaholism, you tend towards being like, okay, I just need to put more time in, find more problems to solve, deliver,
and just work harder. Like, that's always the answer.
Just work harder. And it's been my suspicion that really personal growth at home sort of happens upside down.
Yeah. Right?
It happens with exactly what you're describing. You know, peace, rest.
Yeah. Taking savoring, a really lazy slowness. Bath. Like, yeah, finding the ways, finding the practices, the those little moments to stop doing. Mm-hmm. And for those, for people that are like me, the human doings, not the human beings, dude, it's uncomfortable and it is awkward and it's hard. But I think home can be supportive in that. Like, you can create these little nooks in your house or these little, you know, places or environments that make you feel like rest is the point, not some sort of reward that you have to earn or something.
Or a defeat, right?
Or a defeat.
Like you, yeah, like you didn't, you weren't able to push it all the way through or something.
Yeah.
So you got to sleep. Yeah. I think the, I mean, I'm just so glad we're getting at this, because I think so often there is this pressure to perform on high levels that comes with our jobs and our relationships or, you know, our family upbringing, so many different things. And I think it's refreshing to hear somebody who has been high performing, really hard working, you know, all of that, to see this, you know, thing of like, actually, you know what, this isn't bringing about the sort of quality of life that I hope to have. And I'm interested in exploring this change.
Yeah.
I'm curious if there have been any, I don't know, like practices or habits that have been supportive for you in slowing down and so on.
There have been a few, and I will say, like, I'm just going to be clear to anybody listening, they'll sound mildly horrifying if you are remotely the way I am, where it's like, no, I work hard to not feel bad about just not doing anything on a Saturday. And yeah, that means my house is messier than I would like it to be. I don't know how people have children, because like, we have two dogs and our house is like, it's like a bomb exploded. I don't know how people with kids do it. But being, I don't know, kind of having compassion for myself and like, I'm just tired and I just don't really want to do anything. And that's okay. The other thing I will also say that was good about the all of the construction in the house, I didn't have access to my closet for like, what, 2.5-3 months, and you know, I brought everything that I thought that I would need into the downstairs closet because we were sleeping there for that time. And it was great, because at the end of those 3 months, I was like, oh, I like literally did not miss anything. I mean, there was like maybe one pair of jeans where I was like, oh, I wish I had those. And so when we moved back up, I mean, I still have way too many clothes, but when we moved back up, I immediately filled like one of those black trash bags full of clothes, being like, I don't need this.
Yeah.
And going through that process of giving yourself the freedom to be like, I just don't need all this stuff. That feels really, really good and restorative.
Yeah, definitely. To realize what's functional and what's kind of, you know, unnecessary, dead weight, you know, that is clogging up your closet, your space, but also your mind on some level. I'm curious on this note of possessions and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you have any prized possessions, things that you really love or care about?
Not really. And it's interesting. I was thinking about this. Like, I have things that, like, I care about. You know, so I've given you a little bit of context into, like, my family. But when this is about a decade ago, so my parents were in their, my mother was in her late 60s, my father was in his early 70s, and they wanted to kind of downsize their house a little bit, And so they bought a new house, but it needed a bunch of work done, so they couldn't move in for a while. And they put their house on the market, and they thought it would take a while to sell, and it sold almost immediately. So they had to move. They had to put almost everything they own into storage, and they like rented an apartment for a year. And when they moved into the new house and they called the storage company that had taken all of their stuff, the storage company, this is like the worst story ever, literally they didn't have a big enough storage unit to house all of my parents' things. So they had rented another storage unit and they forgot to pay the bill on it.
What?
And that those people literally like auctioned off all of my parents' things. So we're talking like, you know, three generations of like art and antiques, literally every family photograph, like. And this is after we moved around quite a bit when I was growing up. So already I was like, you're always moving. Every time you move, you're like, well, I don't need to move this. And then you move a bunch of things. And when you're unpacking, you're like, why did I bring this? And you start to get much more sort of ruthless about what you really need when it comes to stuff. And then my parents having this experience, I think it really got me to this point where like, I have things that I enjoy and I like. There is almost nothing that if I lost it tomorrow, I would be really all that upset about.
Mm-hmm.
I have my great grandmother's locket. That's probably the only thing that if I lost it, I would like really be upset. Everything else is like, well, it's just stuff. It's just stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, talk about a really difficult and kind of sad story to teach you the lesson of it could all go and it could get lost and could get auctioned off unexpectedly. Like, how crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So but I form too much attachment to it.
But I'll also say, you know, I explain my mother's sort of obsession with like the perfection in her house. She doesn't have that anymore. Like it's just, and even my mother, I mean, it was absolutely devastating. It was devastating. And it was, I mean, all of a sudden they're like living in this new house and it's literally empty. I mean, it's just, and the one heartbreaking thing that we all still feel is the family photos. I mean, I think we have like maybe 100 family photos now. But I remember a few months afterwards, my mother being like, you know, she's like, I don't wish that it had happened. She was like, but it's just stuff. And like, it sucks, but it's really not the end of the world. And she was like, if anything, it makes it easier for me to focus on like what actually matters. And I think it was like, it ultimately was like a very life affirming and kind of positive experience for my mother, less than my father, but I think it's part of the reason why they are a lot more relaxed and a lot just more chill about things in life than they were.
Yeah, a real forced lesson in detachment. And that could be really important for some things that are have too much emotional energy, you know, invested in them in a way that's like not helpful versus things that are like you know, maybe could support your emotional well-being or something. Wow. That's, I'm weirdly like having a very emotional reaction to hearing this story. I'm like, gosh, how sad. Like, even like when you said like 100 family photos, my dad is a photojournalist. And so like family photos is like,
it's huge,
gigantic.
Yeah. Right?
Like that is my dad's involvement in our family, is the collection and curation of family photos, right? Like that, so.
Yeah, there are some ones too, like we had these black and white portraits, one of me when I was like maybe 5 and one of my mother when she was like 3 or 4. And it was, we always had them next to each other. And you could obviously tell the age difference in the photographs, but it was spooky because you couldn't tell that it was two different children. Like, we looked so identical. And, like, I loved that. I loved being able to, like, see that connection. And it was really interesting when it happened. Like, I was always a little bit conflicted about having kids. And when it happened, like, almost immediately, it was like, I want to have children. And I was like, and honestly, it was like, when all of a sudden you, like, don't have this connection to your past, it felt like, that I had this, like, weird knee-jerk reaction of, like, wanting to find connection to my history, but through children. That wound up not lasting, but, like, and I remember thinking it was really fascinating at the time of, like, how each of us responded.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing is, like, which is amazing, my parents are very social, and their friends were incredible. Like, my mother said she was, like, didn't get out of her nightgown for probably, like, a week, and then her girlfriends came over and was like, get up, you're taking a shower, you're getting dressed, we're going shopping. And they, like, took her to go, like, get a few things for the house, and, like, and it was, and their community really, like, rallied around them in a way that was also really amazing. And I think that's another thing about home life that I don't do that much of, but I grew up with parents that, like, they are always throwing parties and there are always people in the house, and which is kind of amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, social life out of the home is a different kind of thing.
Yeah. You know,
invite people into your space. There's a vulnerability
and
intimacy there with that. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm a huge advocate for that. So,
yeah.
Well, gosh, Casey, this has been such a wonderful conversation. I'm so thankful. I feel like it just went places where I wouldn't have anticipated it to go. And I appreciate your, and no surprise also, your authenticity and vulnerability in sharing what you had to share. Tell us about your life. So thank you so, so very much.
Well, thank you.
As a person who is so invested in this kind of, like, new realm of growth that has to do with slowing down and being less busy, do you have any recommendations for people for how to really engage that in their lives at home?
So I think the things that have been most helpful for me are creating either spaces or rituals that feel decadent in that slowing down. So, like, I made the joke about the bath. Dude, I take at least one long bath, like, a week. And it is, that was the hardest part, honestly, about when the bathroom upstairs was not in existence, because the downstairs tub, I'm 6 feet tall, the downstairs tub did not work.
Yeah.
And that is, and it's interesting, like, I didn't take baths for the longest time, and it really does feel, it feels decadent. Like, I light candles, I work really hard to not be on my phone when I'm in the tub, like, all of that. I also have a couple of different, like, little reading nooks in the house. And I think that's the thing. It's you. And I should go back to the word I used. Make it a ritual, not a habit, not a routine. Make it have something that feels, I don't know, otherworldly, almost spiritual, that feels like you are connecting to a deeper part of yourself or a higher power or whatever it is, and turn your frickin' phone off. It's not truly relaxing, and you're not actually slowing down if you're, like, listening to a podcast or you're, like, if you're consuming, just be, and, like, create these, like, little spaces and these little rituals at home to find that. And it does get kind of addictive as once you start to do it. Like, it feels kind of amazing.
Well, that sounds wonderful. You definitely, like, you know, got me wanting to take a bath without a phone. And perfect.
Yeah.
You know, I can't wait. I hope
light a
try
candle,
that.
Have, like, the lights off.
The rituals of decadently being in the moment. That's such a great takeaway from this. Thank you so much, Casey, for being on this. What are the sort of things that you're working on these days, and if people want to get in touch and see what you're up to, how could they follow you?
Yeah, so I lead a kind of coaching and training program with my business partner, Erica Schneider. This is how you and I met. Impactful Social Writing. So if you go to impactfulsocialwriting.com, you can find out about that. But also, just come connect with me on social, Twitter, LinkedIn, and then probably my most personal growth stuff is on TikTok. So come find me there.
Perfect. Well, I will collect that all into a companion blog post with this episode, and also include some of your written responses for some of the questions that, well, you know, I don't think we got to, because we just had such a, like, you know, through line around some really incredible other stuff. So thank you so much again.
Thank you
for being on the show. And thank you.
Thank you. It was so fun.
Thanks for listening to Home Life for Extraordinary Impact. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you. Please take a moment to rate it, like it, and subscribe wherever you have listened or watched. If you really loved it, check the link in the show notes to become a premium subscriber to support the ongoing work of this project and to unlock some exclusive premium episodes. Home Life for Extraordinary Impact is a project of Home Life Design Lab. Find out more at homelifedesignlab.com, where you can sign up for the newsletter and follow along on Instagram and TikTok. Thanks.